Haynes only trash business is temporarily closed due to potential chemical contamination. And as states tighten restrictions on ivory, Skagway carvers worry about the future. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. The Haynesboro's only waste disposal business is temporarily closed after an unknown chemical was released on site. Community Waste Solutions manager Sally Garten said Wednesday afternoon that earlier that day, a chemical thrown away in a garbage bag became airborne when a machine ran over it. Two employees were exposed to the substance and sent to the clinic. Garten said they were treated for burning eyes and throats, but the impact did not appear to be serious. Fire Chief Brian Clay said a toxicologist was consulted by phone, and they thought the chemical could have been an organic phosphate, such as fertilizer. Clay said he does not believe there is a risk to the community because the spill is isolated to a small area. Garten said the landfill is shutting down in order to clean up the potential contamination. She said they expect to reopen Friday. That leaves Haynes residents without a trash disposal option for at least a day. Interim Borough Manager Brad Ryan said the municipality does not have a backup plan for trash hauling. He said if the closure were to last longer, CWS could set up a transfer station off-site to collect waste. There is one more applicant for an open Skagway Assembly seat, but it's not clear whether her letter of interest will count. Candace Cahill thought she had submitted a letter of interest by the deadline Monday, but later she found that a technical glitch stopped the email from sending. Borough Clerk Emily Deitch says it will be up to the Assembly to decide whether to include Cahill in the list of interested applicants. The Assembly is set to discuss the appointment at its meeting Thursday evening. There are four other applicants, Dominic Rotier, Nathan Helmer, Monica Carlson, and Carl Klupar. A letter from a cruise line association has put more pressure on Skagway officials to take action on stalled port development. The Borough Assembly held a special meeting this week and will continue the discussion Thursday. The letter is from the Cruise Lines International Association. It says Skagway's existing docks will not be able to accommodate larger ships coming to Alaska in 2019. It goes on to encourage the city to work with White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad and move forward. Under a lease that expires in 6 years, White Pass controls almost the entire port. A lease extension would have given the municipality access to build a floating dock and clean up contamination in the ore basin. But the lease extension was rejected in a public vote.
I think we got to sit down face to face with them and really get in a room and see what they're really thinking.
That's Assemblyman Spencer Morgan. Since the lease proposal was thrown out a year and a half ago, the municipality has struggled to find a path forward. The Assembly wrote resolutions and letters saying they want to reopen negotiations with White Pass. But that hasn't happened. Here's Assemblymember Steve Burnham Jr.
Last year, we passed a resolution saying we were willing to reopen talks with the railroad, but I don't think we ever said we would like you formally to show us what your vision is on the waterfront.
The Assembly is paying a consultant about $200,000 to research short-term options for port development. But Burnham says the public deserves to hear what White Pass's vision is.
If that's what they're saying is they want a lease or they want some sort of other agreement, then I think the onus is on them to tell us what it is their vision is so the public can really understand why it's beneficial to them.
Consultant Moffitt and Nickel is set to give a final presentation on June 15th. Assemblyman Orion Hansen said the borough needs to take immediate action after that.
We pick a plan and then we go into negotiations. I think we got to aggressively pursue a White Pass at that point.
Moffitt and Nichols' initial proposals are focused on modifying the current docks to accommodate bigger ships. But a significant complicating factor is contamination in the ore basin. The Assembly met behind closed doors for about an hour Tuesday to talk with the borough attorney about legal options for cleanup. The Assembly didn't make any decisions at Tuesday's meeting. Instead, they decided to extend the discussion about reopening White Pass negotiations to the regular meeting Thursday at 7 p.m. Restrictions on the ivory industry are multiplying in the U.S., causing concern for artists in Alaska. Alaska Native carvers do have a degree of protection under federal law, but non-Native carvers who only work with fossilized ivory are not shielded in the same way. In Skagway, where thousands of cruise ship visitors stop each summer, there is a small but significant group of ivory carvers and sellers who are worried about the future of their craft. KHNS's Abby Collins reports.
That's the sound of a dental tool, but Bruce Schindler is not a dentist. He's an ivory carver. Schindler hunches over a work table in his sunny Skagway studio. He uses the metal drill-like tool he's adapted for his craft to carve a small piece of fossilized mammoth ivory.
A pair of eyes, kind of unfinished idea. But the
great thing Schindler came to Skagway in 1993 to drive a tour bus. Soon after, he started working with ivory. The mammoth ivory he restores and carves comes from the Dawson City area in the Yukon.
I go up and I'll drive hundreds of miles of dirt roads going from gold mine to gold mine, searching for miners who are willing to sell some of the tusks they find.
The mammoth tusks are unearthed as a byproduct of mining. Schindler says if they aren't purchased and restored, they will start to deteriorate.
It will start to degrade. It'll start to rot. And if you don't take actions to preserve it, in a few years it'll be completely worthless. And in a few more years it'll just be dust.
He collects thousands of pounds of fossilized tusks and brings them back to his studio, where he restores them or carves them into smaller pieces. Schindler also works with fossilized walrus tusks.
Carving stations, you can see a number of tusks that are in the various stages of...
Last year, the Obama administration put an almost complete ban on the commercial trade of African elephant ivory in the U.S. But that ban didn't touch the fossil ivories that Schindler and others in Skagway use. Those are still legal. And Alaska natives are permitted to harvest walrus ivory under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. But some states have gone a step further, implementing tougher restrictions that prohibit the trade of nearly all ivory. Schindler's concern is that a similar ban could come to Alaska and devastate the industry here.
It's not just scary, it's kind of apocalyptic in many ways.
Zach Smith is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. It's one of several groups that have lobbied states to put tougher restrictions on ivory. Smith says they're not going after anything protected under federal law. That includes the walrus ivory that Alaska natives are allowed to harvest. But the fossilized ivory is a different story.
NRDC supports the closure of domestic ivory markets focused on elephant ivory and including ivory markets that offer a cover for elephant ivory for the illegal trade in elephant ivory.
Smith says illegal elephant ivory is often presented as a legal product, so prohibiting the trade of other ivories could help cut back on illegal behavior. And some states agree with that logic. For example, California has set a ban that extends to fossilized ivory. Schindler argues it's easy to tell the difference. Those outside laws are already affecting Alaska carvers. Schindler says he's lost about half of his customers, artists who used to purchase tusks from him for their own work. Locally, Schindler says the market is strong, but there is still uncertainty. Kathy Wassman's family owns a shop called Taya River Arts. Wassman wears ivory jewelry that she carved herself. She says sometimes customers question the ethics of what they're purchasing.
I think it's a teaching moment most of the time. Like Bruce was saying, It's the opportunity to let people know that, hey, what you're looking at is unique and it has nothing to do with endangered species.
Schindler says as carvers, they aren't against most of what ivory bans in other states entail, but...
To add Alaskan ivories to this ban is shameful, and it's just misguided.
A resolution was introduced in the Alaska Senate in February that aims at protecting legally acquired walrus, mammoth, and mastodon ivory from current and future laws. Schindler has also been lobbying for local support. The Skagway Assembly recently voted to endorse the resolution in the Senate. Schindler continues to push to protect the legal ivory industry in Alaska, but he is already starting to diversify his business.
Mammoth ivory is still going to stay the center of what I do, but I'm starting to work gold. Because I have access to gold miners, I'm buying gold from them, so I'm starting to work my own gold jewelry. Mm-hmm. I want a backup.
He says no matter what happens, the Skagway artists will find their way forward.
We will adapt, but it will be a shell of what we have done. And the beauty and the joy in restoring something that just had no life beforehand.
They're worried the momentum against the ivory trade doesn't consider the unique and important role it plays in local economies like Skagway's. In Skagway, I'm Abby Collins.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.